So we're continuing the Torah versus heresy. And tonight we'll do the Perek Mishlei Aleph Zayin through Tes. And it's going to be about the fundamental concept of Mishlei, or at least, you know, these 10 prakim, and like the basic message of Mishlei. So I'll explain to you when we get there the difference between those two. Okay. So we're not really going to do a big mashal this time. Okay, that's going to be next time we'll do the mashal of the game. Okay, and that's more of a elaborate mashal. This time will be, like I said, just like an important, it's a thesis. The thesis of Mishlei, we're going to spend most of our time on. And if we have time, if we have time, the second half of this year, I'll just give over some ideas on the Pesukim of Malchios, the Pesukim that we quote from the Torah on Malchios, because, you know, Rosh Hashanah is tomorrow. So, okay. So let's start with Pasuk Zion. Okay. So it says, Yiras Hashem Reishas Das Chochma Muster Vilim Bazim. Okay. So first of all, Rashi right away says, is Adkan Pirshat Tzarech Me'a Asa Shlomo Sefer Zev Atam Asa Sefer. So the first six Pesukim with the introduction with Pasuk Zion, so then Shlomo begins the actual Sefer itself. Okay. So this is the first pasuk of the sefer. Okay. So literally, what it means is that the beginning of knowledge is the fear of Hashem, and wisdom and musar, criticism, a fool degrades. He like puts it down. He puts down the looks down upon, or he degrades. He makes light of. Chachma and Moser. Okay. So let's begin with the first part of the pasuk, that Yiras Hashem Reishis Das. So what does it mean that the fear of Hashem is the beginning of knowledge? Okay. So the Rashi says like this. So it's a very tricky Rashi. And so I learned this with Yaakov Trachman. We must come back to this Rashi a few times. Learned it a little differently each time. Rashi like this, Yiras Hashem Reishis Das. So he says, "He trumas ikar hadas, v'hi tielecha rishono das." Okay, so it's really tricky Rashi. So first he says it's the trumas ikar hadas. Like, what does that even mean? That Yiras Hashem is the trumas ikar hadas. What does trumas even mean? Like, it's a reference to truma. I mean. Lahore it is, but what does it mean? Trumas ikar hadas. It's the truma of the ikar of das. Right? Is anybody right? What does that mean? The truma of the ikar of das. And it's going to be the first thing for das. Right? So Rashi continues. Lefnei chachmascha haktim liyiras yotzrecha. So before your chachma, so it should be preceded by the fear of your creator. So that Yiras Hashem is going to place in your heart, will inspire you to be involved in Chachma and Das, wisdom and knowledge. Okay, if you notice the gears I'm using is a little different because I'm not using the standard text. I'm using the, you know, the academic version or whatever. Supposedly it's a better gear. So it generally is. It's smooth. It's much smoother. Okay, why? Because the fools who don't fear Hashem, so they're mevaza, they degrade chachma and musar. Okay. So the problem with the Rashi is it starts from the very beginning. What does Rashi mean? He trumas ikra das, v'hi tiel rishon das. Okay. So I'll tell you the way I think to read that first part of Rashi, and then we'll try to explain it. So I think, first of all, Rashi's doing, he's doing two things here. Is there are times that Rashi, and Unkelus does this more often, you know, very frequently, and Rashi also, is sometimes you interpret a word in two different ways. And not that it's like Dover Acher with two different Shatim, but like they're both true. Like simultaneously, like sometimes a pasuk will use a word, and its intent, it's really trying to, it's using an ambiguous word for the purpose of making reference to both ideas simultaneously. You know, I just did this with Donny Kiznicki. I just did this the last time we learned. I forgot what was in the Unklus on the, we're talking about the Mun. He was describing the Mun. He used some term of Unklus translates it like, not what the word was, but it's description of the Mun.
So he chalk, there's chalky and frosty. The frost and the chalk. The chalk and the frost.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The frost was the frost, and it's piled up. Right? It's piled up, and it's also frost describing the Mun. Right? He uses like a gear, right? He throws in extra words, but Rashi says he's actually in a word. He's adding in a word. Ramban says, no, he's just learning the same word. It means two different things, and they're both true. Okay, and in the Brachos and the Birchos Yaakov, he does it all the time. So it's fairly common. So I think that's what Rashi is doing. That Rashius can mean two things. Either it can mean first, Rishona, or can mean Trumas Ikaradas. Okay. Now, what the heck does Trumas Ikaradas mean? Okay. So there's another trick that Rashi does. He does this also frequently. When he wants to show you what a word means, so first he'll like use two words in a row. The first one is a transition to get to the second. Okay. So he wants to show you that the word Rashius could really mean Ikar. It means like primary, but the transition to Ikar from Rashius is through Truma, because like Truma is for example called Rashius, Rashius de Gancha, right? So Rashius means like Truma, and then he's translating Truma for you. So it's like a string of terms. It doesn't mean it's the Truma of the Ikar. It's Rashius means Trumas, comma, which is Ikar Hadas. Okay, Rashi also does that trick multiple times. He'll say two words in a row. But really the middle term is basically three terms in a row. It's Rashius, Truma, Ikar. It's three terms, it's not one phrase, it's three separate terms. And Truma is like a transitionary term to show you how Rashius relates to Ikar. Okay? Okay, it's a little complicated. But I think ultimately this is the way we settled on to read this Rashi. So basically it's like this. Rashi is saying that Yiras Hashem is two things. It's the essence of Das, okay, the Truma Sadas, it's the primary thing. Like when you say Truma, Rashius de Gancha, it's like the best part. Like, you know, you're taking out the ikar, the essence of the thing. And it's also primary first. It's in I guess chronology in a certain sense. So it comes first in time, and it's also first in the sense of primary, the main thing. Okay. Okay. And then he continues, right, and he explains that last phrase. Before your chachma, first you have to have Yiras Hashem. And then he adds the idea that that's going to cause you to be osik in Chachma and Das. Okay. So I'd like to develop those two ideas of Yiras Hashem. Okay. So just as a background here is you know, Mishlei is a book of Chachma, Sefer Chachma, but it's not like just like, you know, how the, you know, a book of philosophy. But it's very much tying the idea of knowledge and wisdom to the idea of Yiras Hashem. So Yiras Hashem is really found throughout the book. You'll see it comes up often. In fact, the book Yiras Hashem is the beginning of Mishlei. It's the first pasuk after the introduction. It's also really the end of Mishlei. The Eish HaSchayil is by Yiras Hashem, he tesalo, right? So in a sense, it's the beginning and it's the conclusion. And it's scattered throughout this idea of Yiras Hashem. And it's really a key idea throughout Mishlei is really the tie between Yiras Hashem and knowledge. Okay, so let me start first with this idea that before your chachma you have to have yira. Okay, so let's see, is why? Because avilim she'enim yiras Hashem bozin chachma v'maser. So I think this is something that's, you know, fairly common. We can see is that it's not enough for a person to be smart and to have wisdom and knowledge, but if a person doesn't have the right attitude towards the world and towards the idea of knowledge and other people and just like a general proper orientation. Let me explain first how I'm using the term Yiras Hashem. Okay, Yiras Hashem is a it's a very hard term to define. Okay. The way, in my opinion, and again, you asked Rosh Niwes what he says. I'm curious. Actually, no, I think I once discussed with him at a wedding. I think we actually had similar definitions. He had a pasuk to back him up. Okay. I don't. But he had a pasuk from the middle 20, you know. But is that the way it seems to me is Yiras Hashem. It's a certain intellectual, emotional orientation towards the world. It's like an attitude, the way you look at the world. Okay, it's not just cognitive. It's like a combination of your emotional disposition, your intellectual framework, how you look at the world. The idea is you look at the world that it's not your world. You recognize that the reality is it's God's reality. He created the reality, and your wishes and desires do not determine the way the world actually is. Okay, in a sense, you're living within his world, and you're constrained by the reality that he set up. So this entails following on a basic level, you know, following Chachma, not because you want something to be that way, realizing that's not the case. If you know, you don't want fire to be hot, you don't want to get burnt, but you realize that just because you want something, if you touch it, you're going to get burnt. That's like a really primitive notion of the reality principle, you know, what Freud would call the reality principle. But it entails also recognizing that he's the king, he's the melech, right? And he has the ability to make decrees and to make mitzvos, and his word sets up reality, and you have to follow, just like you have to follow the laws of nature that he fixes. And that's an element of the Yiras Hashem, of a person who is not just simply following his own fantasies and his own desires and wishes, but a person who recognizes there's constraints brought about by laws of reality, but there's also laws from the Torah and mitzvos that you have to follow, and realizing, having a certain recognition that if you don't follow the mitzvos and you don't keep the Torah, then, you know, then just like when you touch the fire, you'll get burned. You'll also get burned by not listening to the decrees and laws that he sets out, whether it means the fear that God's going to come in and punish you, you know, which is like a very, very basic level, or recognizing that he set up these laws because intrinsically these mitzvahs are good for you. And if you do something that is an avera, which is something that's harmful for you, you're going to get harmed. And if you do a mitzvah, it's going to be good for you. So, you know, there's different levels of schar v'yonesh, but Yiras Hashem is on a basic level, is a recognition of schar v'yonesh through in the framework of mitzvahs, in the framework of the laws of nature, recognizing that if you violate God's will, in either of those frameworks, there's consequences. The recognition that there's a reality to consequences, whether you like it or not, because you're living in his world. It's not your world, it's his world that you live in. Yeah, go ahead, Robbie.
So I would agree with you completely. I like it.
Okay.
It seems to me, what I'm hearing you say, just put slightly differently, is that it's a recognition that the world is God's.
Yeah.
It's set up by God.
Right.
And that you could butt your head against it all you want, or you could follow the system.
Right.
There's only one thing I didn't.
Right.
That Yiras Hashem, you're not really putting the word Yira into it. So I would just change one thing. That it's a recognition of the awe of God's system. You know, and therefore it all comes into a very broad picture of the system.
Okay, I'm specifically not doing that. I'm specifically not, okay. Like the Rambam in I guess Perek Beis Yesodei Torah. It's like there's a more further development idea of Yiras Hashem of the Roman Mosakel. The exaltedness of God, you know. I just be honest with you, I don't see that quite from Mishlei, that he's using Yiras Hashem in that sense. The Rambam does.
In your definition, there's one type, small element missing. Of in other words, it's a recognition that the system belongs to God, it's created by God,
right?
But it doesn't speak, and this is, I think, where you're touching. It doesn't speak to his omnipotence. You know what I mean? It doesn't speak.
No, it does.
It indirectly. So I'm saying more directly, I would just say that God is the omnipotent creator of this system. You know, that just, right. But you don't need the word ah. I'm just saying that just to recognize that it's a system that comes from a system maker who is worthy of Yira, whatever that is.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
is it both into your definition that the person treats it as real, these things? It is, right?
That he treats it as real?
Right, like he'll actually avoid it. Not just he recognizes it intellectually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah, intellectual, emotional, and he lives his life. Yiras Hashem, it dictates how a person leads his life.
Right. That sounds like a hero. It's like something you actually fear.
Yeah, you fear the consequences of violating God's will or breaking the system. You know what I mean? Right. You're not living in this, you haven't developed this fantasy. Yeah, there's consequences to going against God's will. Right? And you're afraid of the consequences. Yeah, right, which is basically, you know, Skavianish. I think, to me, it seems that Yiras Hashem is really, in Mishlei, is based upon that. I'm not saying that there's not a deeper development as a person matures, and the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah in Perek Beis does have that. In the Torah, he has that, and, you know, maybe, I'm not saying throughout Tanakh you don't have that. I think in Mishlei, that seems to me the way that it's generally used.
Okay. Rabbi Wizmer?
Yeah.
What exactly then is the interplay that dynamic of like the pleasure pain principle, recognizing that the world has dangers and you have to respect it? What does that mean that's the beginning of Chachma?
Okay, good. So it's that if a person just looks at wisdom and knowledge as a tool, as a means for achieving whatever desires he has. Let's say a person is an egoistic person. You know, the Evil, in a sense, I want to say Moskowitz defined the Evil as a division in the Evil and the Kseel. The Kseel, he just says, stop, a fool. A fool, an idiot, he's a dope. That's a Kseel. But an Evil is like a person who's like a sophisticated fool who believes that it's an arrogant fool. He thinks that he knows, he doesn't really know anything, but he thinks he knows something. Okay, so the arrogant fool, he's an Evil, and they don't fear God. They think they know everything. They think that they're basically, they know how everything is, and they're going to tell you, and they're not worried about, Chachma tells them there's consequences. They think they know better. You know, so they don't need you to tell them through Chachma how things are. They know how things are going to be. They don't want you to criticize them. They don't want instruction. It's a person who has a certain sense that they know how the world is. The world is going to runs based upon the way they think it should run, the way they think it will run, and they're not willing to hear Chachma. They're not willing to hear you criticize them. They're basically not open. And Evil is not open to hear anything that goes against the way his preconceptions of the world. It's a certain fixed way of looking at the world based upon mostly his emotions, how he wants the world to be, and he's not open, his mind is not open to hearing ideas that conflict with his basic desires and his preconceived notions of how things are. So for that person, any you can't talk to that person, you can't teach that person anything. There's a basic level, of Yiras Hashem, which means a certain openness to reality and recognition, a certain humility. Yiras Hashem is very much tied to a Nava. If you look through Psukim in Mishlei, this is in those chapters in the middle, even over here, we'll get to it later on, if Mishlei is going to develop it, there's a tie between three ideas, Yiras Hashem, Chachma, and Anava. Those three ideas are triplet. They come together in a lot of places. But it's a certain humility of how you look at the world, that you're willing to be open to new ideas that might contradict the way you view the world or that go against the way you want the world to be. And if a person doesn't have that openness, then you can't teach them. They're not going to, you're banging your head against the wall. It's not going to accomplish anything with those people. Okay, so like the beginning is the proper attitude, the proper receptiveness to Chachma and to Musa. Okay. How does a person get that? Where do you get that from? Circularity in here is because generally the way you develop proper midos is through Chachma, through learning ideas that teaches you, you know, what are good midos, what are bad midos. But over here, you end up with a mido, if you want to call it that, of Yiras Hashem, certain attitude that precedes knowledge. So if you don't have it, how do you get it? Okay, so the answer is you don't. You don't get it. You have to come to the table with Yiras Hashem. Okay, and I think primarily people have it because of the way that they're raised, the society that they're brought up in, their friends, their youth, things like that. It's essentially impossible. If a person has reached adulthood and they're an Evil, then there's no real hope for that person. You can't really talk to that person. I mean, maybe something will happen in that person's life where they'll hit rock bottom and that will cause them to reflect. But you, okay, so I don't want to say it's impossible, but there's nothing you can do to help that person change their ways. Life's experience has to, life has to educate them. They have to get to the point where they break down, where there's a total breakdown of their, the worldview, right? The shofar, the blast of the shofar has to intrude on their world and show them. Malchus Hashem has to intrude on their world and break it down to the point where they're you know, they're, it's a breakdown of the whole, their whole framework of life. And then it becomes possible for them. But there's nothing you can really do to educate a person or to teach them if they're an evil, if they're, if they don't have the basic level of Yiras Hashem. Okay? So really, it really needs to be something that, like in a child, like it's more, it's a more important to inculcate in them a sense of Yiras Hashem before you even bother teaching them Chachma and Das and things like that. It has to be the right attitude. Okay? Not so easy, but it's a prerequisite. A prerequisite for knowledge is the right attitude towards knowledge. Yeah, go ahead, Yaakov.
Just repeat that sense is a sense that you live in the world of consequence and cause and effect.
It's that's one aspect of it, that you live in a world of consequences, but it very much reflects on the person himself also. I'm saying it's very much against Gaiva and it's for Anava. That idea that the way I conceive of the world and the way I want the world to be is not necessarily the way the world is. It's not my world. And I have a desire for the world to be a certain way, but that doesn't make the world a certain way. And I have to adjust myself to the way reality is. And I can't just close my eyes and pretend, you know, I live in the world I want to exist.
Right.
And therefore it's important. How are you going to learn about the world? If the world is not what you want it to be, but it's something else, what is it? Well, that's where Chachma comes in. And that's where Musar comes in. Musar can come in and say, listen, you are this way, but you have to adjust yourself. And Chachma is the way you learn about the world. There's a role of Chachma and Musar if you realize that it's not your world and your preconceived notions are wrong or could very well be wrong. And then there's a role for Chachma and Musar in your life. And there's a value for it. It will inspire you. Right, it was titein belibcha lasak b'chachma. Then you'll realize, hey, I need to learn chachma and das, because I got to figure out what this world is. I don't want to keep suffering consequences because of my own stupidity, because of my own preconceived false notions. Then I realize I need mishlei, I need chachma, I need the Torah. I need the Torah as an instruction book. How do I lead my life? Because if I don't, and I just keep acting blindly as a fool, then I'm going to hurt myself. I'm going to destroy myself. There's going to be severe consequences. And I don't want to die. I don't want to get hurt. I want to succeed. I want to be a happy person. So now I need Chachma and Das and Musar in order to instruct me in how to perfect myself and how to lead a life that's going to be in line with reality. As opposed to an Evil. Evil doesn't need Chachma and Musar. He's got it all. Evil has it all. He's a fool who has all the knowledge in the world. He defined Evil as this, like a sophisticated, it was years ago, I think. He defined it as like a sophisticated fool.
Right.
It's the fool who thinks he knows things. He doesn't, but he thinks he does. It's much worse than a regular Xeel. Right. Regular Xeel, you know, I don't think, I don't want to say for sure, but I don't think in these 10 Prakim that Mishle uses the word Xeel even once. Yeah, I'm probably wrong, okay? But Evil is the operative term in these 10 Prakim. I'm sure somebody can check that out.
Yes, yeah, right here.
What's
a I looked down at the page.
What's a Xeel? Is a real
thing. Oh, man. What, really? It's in Paragraph Aleph already?
Yeah, Chaf Beis.
Okay, fine. It's been a while since I've seen it. Okay, yeah, besides Paragraph Aleph Chaf Beis, I don't think it's another time, okay?
So what's a Xeel? A real?
A dope, a total dope. That's a Xeel. A total dope.
Really?
Three times?
No.
Paragraph Aleph? Oh, you raised your hand. Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah,
five
yeah.
times.
Yeah, he puts Xeel in the same
part. Yeah, I do see another one.
Oh, okay. Okay. Also. I take it back entirely. Okay. Totally wrong. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
So is this Das that we're referring to specifically MS, like Das of Torah? I think a person can read a lot of secular books and learn a lot about life, so to speak.
Right.
Without Yiras Hashem.
Right.
It's not necessarily a prerequisite.
It means. I'm saying that the person, I think. Is that the way Mishle is going to describe it is Yiras Hashem. But yeah, I mean, a person, let's say a secular person, I think it's possible for him to have a corresponding attitude to this. There's other issues if he doesn't have Yiras Hashem, and certainly not going to work for Torah and mitzvahs and things like that. But if you were to learn the book not as referring to Torah, but in terms of just like knowledge, then yeah, I think you could. There would be a corresponding type of attitude that would allow for knowledge. There's still, you know, there is a corresponding idea of the Evil, not in the framework of Torah. But like we're trying to, over here, Chachma and Das means, besides just wisdom and knowledge, also means Torah. That's why it's, you know, it means, you know, Yiras Hashem. I think, you know, I've had this debate. This is a debate that I had with Yaakov. We weren't able to, for sure, about whether you'd say that Yiras Hashem, a person, let's say, a secular person, doesn't believe in God. You know, we're going to get to these guys in a second. You know what I mean? Like, it's to some degree in the modern world, things are a little trickier than they were. So the question is, for him, would you have a corresponding emotion? It would seem, I think you have to say, it would seem you have to say yes. But in the framework of Mishle, that reality is Yiras Hashem, you know, and then that's, you don't have a alternative to that. I think so. But, you know, again, we're going to develop not a simple answer. Okay. Okay, good. So is that, another aspect of it is why it has to come first. I think there's the Mishnah it's the Mishnah Perkei Avos, okay, which is very similar to this Rashi. The Mishnah Perkei Avos says is that person whose Chachma is Yiras Hashem precedes his Chachma, the Chachma is Mekuyim, the Chachma will last. The person whose Chachma precedes his Yira, then the Yira is not gonna, then the Chachma is not gonna last. The Chachma comes first, okay. So I think I'm trying to remember who it was. Maybe it was the Rambam or whatever it is. But just another idea is that if you have the right attitude about your Hashem and say Torah and mitzvos, and then when you learn Chachma, you learn about the mitzvos. So the Chachma, you're already doing the right thing. You're already living the proper life based upon the way you were raised, the way you were, just because God said so, you're living the life of Torah and mitzvos. So then as you get older and you learn about Torah and mitzvos, and you see why this really is the best way of life and it's good, so that knowledge reinforces your habits, the way you're doing it. So you're going to come to love the knowledge. You'll have an ava for Chachma, because Chachma has shown you why the life that you're already leading really is a good life and is the best thing for you. Okay? But if it's the other way around, so you're going to, it's when you first learn Chachma, you're not going to have Yiras Hashem if you start with Chachma. Every time you learn knowledge, it's always telling you, it's always going against what you're naturally inclined to do. So you're going to relate to Chachma as something that's like a negative. Emotionally, it's going to be a negative for you. Because it's always going to be critical criticism of you. You know what I mean? If every time you learn something, that's like, to some degree, that's the evil. So, you know what I mean? Like whenever since he hasn't started with Yiras Hashem, whenever he gets Chachma, he always feels like it's telling him that there's something wrong with him and it's not good. It grates against his ego. So it's always going to have his attitude towards Chachma is going to be one of the negative attitudes, as opposed to a person who's already aligned his emotions and his habits with the proper Derech HaChayim, then the Chachma reinforces what he's already doing. Okay, the side point, Rashi, you know, Rashi, I think, is in a sense referencing the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, but he doesn't explain it here. Okay. The second point of Rashi, of the Truma Sticker Hadas, okay, I say what it means is the essence of das, the truma sadas, the ikar hadas. It really is truma sadas, ikar hadas. Okay, it's two separate phrases, not one phrase, two separate phrases. So it means the ratio sadas, the primary thing, the best part of knowledge, is Yiras Hashem. Yeah. So what does that mean? So I think it means So there's another pasuk. I'm just gonna skip to it. I think it's Beis Zion. No, Beis Hay. So if you look in Beis, let's just look in Beis Gimel Dalan Hay. We'll just very quickly. I just want to show the other thing. Normally we're not going to do this. Normally we're just going to stay in the pasuk we're doing. But this is just like a little different because I said Yiras Hashem is a theme. It's like the thesis of the book. But in Beis Gimel, he says Kim Levina Tikrela Tuna Kipin Kalacha. Like if you call out to understanding and you raise your voice, call out for it. Intavakshan ka kasikamun and tahtasana. You seek knowledge and chachma You seek it like you seek money and you seek treasures. Oz tavin yiras Hashem v'das l'kim timsa. Then you're going to understand yiras Hashem. Okay. So in a sense, there's a stira because over here he's saying yiras Hashem reishis das, that you begin with yiras Hashem. When over there it's saying after you pursue knowledge and wisdom, then you'll understand yiras Hashem. So is yiras Hashem the prerequisite to knowledge, or is yiras Hashem something that follows after you seek out and pursue knowledge? Then you eventually come to an understanding of yiras Hashem. Right? To some degree, there's a contradiction. Right? To some degree. But I think the idea is here, this Rashi of Trumas Ikar Hadas. Trumas and Ikar Hadas is what knowledge does is knowledge takes the Yiras Hashem that you have, that you start off with, and it develops the Yiras Hashem. That's what your knowledge does. It's knowledge works on something. So it develops that part of your personality that already has the right attitude towards reality. And then when the more you learn, the more you're developing the whole essence of the person, his whole relationship to the world around him. And the more he knows, the more you learn, then the more you're going to, your attitude towards the world around you and towards God will change and develop. And you'll get a more sophisticated and deeper understanding of the world that you live in. And of Hashem, okay. So in a sense, is the core, the essence of knowledge is the Yiras Hashem, and it's the knowledge that really develops what your it acts on your Yiras Hashem. And if you don't have Yiras Hashem to begin with, there's nothing for the knowledge to develop. There's no symbiotic relationship between Yiras and Chachma. Yes. Yeah. Right. Well, Yiras is the prerequisite for knowledge, but then Chachma develops Yiras Hashem. And as you get more and more knowledge, then your idea of Yiras Hashem develops and you get a more sophisticated idea of Yiras Hashem. And to some degree, that's what Rabbi is, I think, referring to, is being in the Rambam and Perek Beis of this idea of Roma Sakash Baruch, how exalted God is. See, that's something, if you look in that Rambam, he's referring to after a person studies Sakash Baruch Hu's world and you study Maisa Bracious, and it's in the Perek of Maisa Merkava, I believe, something like that. Is after you have a deep knowledge of and you study the universe and the laws and the creations and of all God, and you're filled with this amazing love of God, and you step back, you reflect on yourself, and you have a Yiras Hashem, so then you realize that you're in this turn off HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there's different like levels of Yiras Hashem. There's different, much more, at, like the child has to start off with the basic level of Yiras Hashem in order to be receptive to knowledge. But as the child learns more and more and he has a deeper understanding of the world, his idea of Yiras Hashem develops and it flourishes. And that's what knowledge really does. Knowledge is developing your sense of reality.
Yeah, you said it. You missed it in Sukkim in Perek Beis.
Okay.
He says right out. He says, I think what it is it's Gimel Dalet Hey, right? So I think what it is this is the lowest level. This is the beginning.
This is the beginning.
What you need.
Yes. Yes.
Right? And I'll tell you what, Gay tipped it off. He says, because if you look for the silver, wait a minute, silver's not the most valuable thing. Gold is.
Okay.
Meaning that when you start at the lower level, all you think there is silver.
I like
but as you go up the ladder, you're going to find out, wait, there's gold here.
Okay, good. And
right now, he calls it silver.
That's good. That's good.
It's the beginning.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. Very good. Very good. All right. Okay, good. So that's the other idea, the Ikar Hadas. Okay. I developed this point, I think, in a shiur I gave to maybe it was a year or two ago. It's called Knowledge in Yiras Hashem. So there's a few Gemaras I think I brought in to like develop this point. And I think it was, you know, I don't remember exactly what I said, but it was something along these lines. Right? You were there, actually, weren't you? You weren't there? Okay.
It was last
year?
Yeah.
Maybe. Something like that, a year or two ago. Okay, but it was based on these psukim. Okay, based on these psukim. So it's this idea. So in a sense, a year is a prerequisite, but then year is also the essence that knowledge develops. Okay, the knowledge develops of the person. Okay, good. That's and that's I think the thesis of the book. This idea of the relationship between Yiras Hashem and knowledge, and in a sense, everything that comes after that is developing this point. Okay, it's developing this point, and you'll see how are you on. It's not easy. It's okay, not simple. Okay, I think that's one way to learn this pasuk. That's the thesis of the whole book. Okay, the other way is a much saying much less. Okay, and the other way is just it's in a sense part of the introduction. it's because that it's, and the question is how you know, seriously you want to take this Rashi. This is the saying, beginning of the book. It's not part of the introduction. I know. That's why I'm saying that. Correct. I know. Look, I guess if you didn't have that Rashi, I would have said it's part of the introduction. That he's just telling you another prerequisite for the book is Yiras Hashem, because otherwise there's no point. The book's not written for an Evil. An Evil is not going to gain anything from the book. I know, but if you take that Rashi seriously, that this is the beginning of the book, it's Mustava you interpret as the thesis statement of the book. Okay, good. Now let's just move on to, anybody have any questions on this? Okay, so let's just take the next two psukim, and then that'll be for tonight. So the next two psukim are pasuk ches and tes. Okay, so shema b'ni musar v'icha v'al titosh Torah simecha. So listen, my son, to the musar of your father, and don't don't abandon the instructions of your mother. Ki livyas chein hein l'roshecha, because there'll be an accompaniment. Of chain of grace for your head. I think that means like a necklace or something.
Yeah.
Okay, and a necklace for your neck. Okay. Okay. So now a few things before we get into the pasuk is first of all, these two psukim, they're like, I don't know a great word to say, may come off wrong, but they're like stock psukim. Okay. Shlomo Melch has like a bunch of these psukim, and he just pulls them out sometimes of his bag and he puts them in. They're like basically these psukim get repeated. These types, psukim just like Ches and Tes, very similar, are repeated throughout these 10 prakim. Very similar. In a sense, it's almost like the recurring message of the book. Okay, it's a recurring message over and over in like different ways. He says in this way, he says in that way. And it's like possible you can analyze why in this way he says it this way, and that way he says it that way. But these are like very, it's a refrain. It's almost like a common refrain of the book. Okay? Yeah, go ahead.
Design itself is not.
No, I don't think so. No, it's like Ches and Tes are the refrain. Zion is like, it's a different idea. That's like an essential theme. But you'll see like very often before he introduces, the way the book is, it's composed of, by the book, I mean the first 10 prakim. It's composed of major mashalim. It's composed of like a mashalim that could be like 10 psukim at a time, 8 psukim, 15 psukim, or sometimes 25 psukim. You know, it's big psukim, and very often, every time he transitions into another mashal, he throws in like a couple, two or three of these psukim, which are very similar to these types of psukim. Okay, you will see them, okay? We'll see them. But the basic message that the father of Mishle is trying to convey to the reader, to his son, okay? Yes. The father of Mishle. Okay, so that's the issue. So who is the father of Mishle? Okay. So the father of Mishle is simultaneously both Shlomo Melech and is also a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay? It's God talking to you through Shlomo Melech. Okay? So in a sense, you're supposed to look at Shlomo as the father instructing his son. But it's also Kadosh Baruch Hu instructing you through Mishle. They're like both simultaneously true. There's a certain ambiguity. Like I said, it's another situation where there's a purposeful ambiguity built in of who exactly is the father. But it's simultaneously Shlomo, the Navi, and Kadosh Baruch Hu, who's the father of Mishle.
And it's Shlomo's commissioned by God?
Yes, I think. Like I said, we'll see in Perek Dalet, they'll give us the background. I don't know why Shlomo ordered the book exactly this way, but the background of the book comes out, I think, in the beginning of Perek Dalet. Okay. So, it's kind of have to see. Like in this pasuk, for example, it would seem that Shlomo is the father. You'll see Rashi, right? What does Rashi say? He's like this. He says, Torah Savicha, right? Why does it say Torah Savicha? Oh man, this is one of the things where she has a crazy girsa. God. Okay, I'm going to ignore that. I don't think I noticed this when I did it. So I'm going to pretend that there wasn't the crazy girsa here. Okay.
Whereas Musar and Torah switch?
Yeah, switch. I forgot. I remember I saw this. So I forgot. We had, there was a reason why Rashi did that. Not that he had a different pasuk, but maybe he wants to show you each one. Each one is going on each one. Like, don't learn specifically. Like, you could learn. Whenever you're pasuk like this, is why does it say Musar Avicha and Torah Simecha? So you could be Dorish and say, look, the Torah, for some reason the mother is the Torah and the father is the Musar, and I don't know, the mother is you know, more and more instructing and the father is criticizing. I don't know, come with them. But another way to learn is just like it wants to have Torah and Musar and it wants to have a father and mother. So the way of doing it is supposed to say, Shmabani Musar Vitara Savicha, Bimecha, it like splits it up in like you know, I guess in a poetic way. But really it's not unique. Each one is true to both. Yeah, go ahead.
So isn't there an idea in the Sukkim in Torah where it says Kavod and Yira by your father and the mother that it hasn't switched?
Yeah.
Because you'd be inclined to do the opposite.
Yes.
So like, you can kind of slice it however you want when you have, like.
Oh, well, there is a specific reason why it doesn't.
Right, but I'm saying like you could say it's Musar Avicha, or you could say, no, really it's Musar Yimecha, but it switches because you'd be inclined the other way. Like.
Well, here it kind of lines up with, I think, what you, the intuition of how you'd want it.
Okay, fine.
Right. But, you know, I didn't prepare this guy. I did look at it, but I didn't prepare it. So I'm going to pretend it doesn't exist, okay? The Gersha we have in Rashi, okay? Not the one I've been using up until now. That's good, okay? We're gonna go with that for now. It's a little more convenient. Okay, so what does it mean, Torah Imecha? Or, sorry, Musar Avicha is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The father is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Masha Nasan B'Sinai B'Ksav Ve'Alpeh L'Moshe. So it's the Torah Shebichsav that Hashem gave at Sinai, and the Torah Shebichsav that He gave through Moshe. Okay, so that's the Musar Avicha, or Rashi here has Torah Avicha. Okay, and Imecha Rashi says, who's the mother? The mother is, he says, Umasecha, your nation, Knesset Yisrael, Tumama Imcha Vaya. Right, it compares your mother, I think, to a lioness or something like that. Okay, so that's the derabanan, the Chazal made in order to protect the Torah. Okay, so it's essentially saying to listen to Torah Shavuot, Torah Shavuot, and also derabanan. Yeah, go ahead, Yaakov.
Isn't this a verse
when
you expect it to be?
No,
when you expect the
Torah
Shavuot to become Torah?
I know, that's where Rashi probably flips it. Okay. we're just working with Rashi. But I hear that's why probably Rashi flips it to Torah Savicha and Musar Yimecha. Okay. How he does that, I don't know. It's interesting. He must be saying that they're on both. The Torah and the Musar are both equally on both.
Where did Rashi flip?
In this Gersa, in this one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have the master academic version that has all the perfect Gersas and sort of.
According to that.
Like I did that. I mean, it's generally better. It's generally a little smoother. Smoother and better, okay? But, you know, if you don't like it, then you always just go with whatever works best for you. You know what I mean? That's my general rule, okay? It gives you a lot of options to choose from also. That's nice. Okay? You never get anything wrong.
Rabbi Zimmer.
Yes.
I don't understand the logic of saying that both Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebapeh is whatever Rashi's Girsa is, whereas, and then there's a third category of Gezerah. Like, why not just say one was Torah Shebaal Peh and the other was Torah Shebichsav? Seems like a convoluted way of constructing it.
Well, there's really three things. There's Torah Shebichsav, right, the Torah that, as we have written down. Then there's like the system of halacha of Torah Shebaal Peh, the Gemara, the Mishnah, right, explaining and filling out the details of the mitzvah, like the perush, like the Raman in his Akdama, not Akdama. I think at the beginning of the Mishnah Torah, he says like the perush of Torah Shebichsav is Torah Shebapeh. And then you also have the derabanans, the siyagim and the gzeros that the Chazal, that the Chacham Yisrael added on top of the Torah to make it Mishmeres.
But shouldn't that be considered just part of Torah Shebapeh? Meaning that was the dominion that was given to the rabbis. They do Torah Shebapeh.
Torah Shebapeh here means what was given to Moshe Rabbeinu and Har Sinai as a perish for Torah Shebichsav, as a perish for the mitzvos.
Mm-hmm.
It's two different things. The fact that, for example, Pri Etz Hadar is a esrog, that's Torah Shebapeh, that's Mipi Hashmua, but that's not a Derabanan. That's the Mesorah.
Okay, maybe reframing my question. Why is this like a distinction to make here in Mishle, the distinction between Gzeira versus Torah Shebaal Peh from Moshe Rabbeinu directly?
It's a good question why he's breaking it up into three categories, right? Good question. I mean, he's saying two come from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Torah Shebaal Chasav and Torah Shebaal Peh. That's Avicha. And then Nimecha is things that are generated entirely from Klal Yisrael. You know, so I think that's why he's doing it. He's trying to split up Avicha and Nimecha. That the mother is referring to Knesset Yisrael and Avicha is a Kadosh Baruch Hu. From a Kadosh Baruch Hu, we have Torah Shebaal Chasav, Torah Shebaal Peh. That's the Raisa. That's from Kadosh Baruch Hu. And then from Klal Yisrael, from the Chachmei Yisrael, we have Gzeiros and Siyagim and things like that. I think that's why he's, what you normally think of as Torah Shebaal Peh as one thing, Rashi splitting up, so that you attribute one to Kadosh Baruch Hu and one to Knesset Yisrael. Even though, yeah, in certain frameworks, we just put them together. Okay. Now, what does it mean? Livyas Chain, he says, Chibor Shel Chain. Okay, it means an accompanying. Chain Roshecha, HaTorah VaMusar Yiro Roshecha Livyas Chain. So the Torah and the Musar is going to be an accompaniment of grace. It'll grace your Rosh, I guess your head, could be your outlook, the way you think of the world, the way you're perceived. Ukanakim shall ajay zahav yulugag rosecha. So like a golden necklace for your neck. Okay, let's have a recha for your neck. Okay, fine. Continues a little bit. That's it. Okay. Like I said, what's the basic message? Again, I don't want to dwell on these psukim because I'm telling you, these psukim come back in, you know, six different ways and they're different variations. I'm not going to get into the details. The idea is to get a broader overview. Okay. I think this is the basic message of Mishle and what, in a sense, the father is trying to convey. The father of Mishle is trying to convey to you, the reader, is the essential idea is, and again, it's not going to be a chiddush to you guys, okay, but it's what Mishle is trying to convey, is that the Torah that God gave us and the Torah that was transmitted through Torah Shebaal Peh and the Gzeros, the Chachmei Yisrael created, they're good for you. They improve you. They enhance your life. Okay, they will benefit you, right? So they're like an adornment for you, like jewelry. They're something that's gonna create chayim, make you appealing to other people. You follow the system of Torah and mitzvahs and their abundance, the rices, the whole thing. You'll create chayim. People are gonna like who you are, and it'll benefit you. And it's something that's you shouldn't look at Torah and mitzvahs and their abundance as restrictions and things that are harming you. They're taking you away from your enjoyment in life, but rather, adarabha, there's something that's going to benefit you and make you better off, and it's something that's good for you. Okay, and this is really the core message that it's over and over, and in a sense, all these mishalim are really trying to get you to appreciate that chachma and musar and das and all these things are not something that you have to force yourself to do, and that is that, you know, God is trying to make you do it by putting a gun to your head. If you don't do it, he's going to punish you. But the system of Torah mitzvahs is for your benefit, right? Latov lach, it's going to enhance you and it'll be better for you and everybody's going to like you because of it. Okay, you'll be successful and a large part of the book is devoted to explaining that and showing you how that's the case. Okay, Baruch Hashem and this yeshiva, that's like one of the core messages that we've always said over and over, and it's like, but you know, it wasn't something that's well known in Shlomo Malek's time, and I don't think Klal Yisrael, I think from the Chet HaEgel, through the Chet HaMeraglim and through modern times, I think that this message has definitely failed to be appreciated. Okay, like I said, in this yeshiva, we harp on that, we make that a major point. But I don't think that, you know, and look, and I guess for us also, do we really take this to heart? Even though we may say it with our lips, but do we really appreciate how all these things that the Torah says we can't do, things that we should do, we don't want to, you know, when it goes up against our emotions, the way we want to see the world, do we really reflect that, you know, our emotions have to change, but rather the mitzvahs are for, you know, doing us a good thing. They're benefiting us. They're perfecting us, making us better people in all regards. That's something that we have to take to heart. And it's certainly something that's not, unfortunately, I would say it's not widespread. It doesn't have widespread acceptance and knowledge. And that's a major objective of the book, is to make that known, that idea known. Okay. Nothing, no great kiddush there. Again, next time we're going to get into the heart of the book, we'll get into taking up the first mashal. Okay, which will go about 10 seconds. Anybody have any questions from what we did tonight? No? Okay. let me just stop this.